Welcome to the Electra International series, Think Like a Leader. We all enjoy hearing another person's success story, and we hope our conversations with leaders from across the electrical construction industry will help spark your interest and creativity in finding ways you can think like a leader. Greetings to everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today. This is another episode of Electra International's Think Like a Leader. Why is this important? Well, let me tell you, we have someone with us who has a very different kind of company and a very different approach to being a leader. We're here with Toby Mitchell. He is CEO of Classic Electric and Consulting. So, Toby, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, I was looking at your website, and Classic Electric and Consulting really does pride itself on providing education and honesty in the electric and green industry. Are there specific steps that you need to take to instill this focus of purpose into your workforce? How do you get them to think about education and honesty as being key for their job?
So for us, those are two of our five core values, education and honesty. And as a leader, you truly have to believe in that, and you have to live by what you're saying. We have weekly meetings, not only with our management, but our field staff, where we talk about education, honesty, and how important it is, and just keep driving it home over and over and over again. We have company newsletters that go out every quarter, and we just keep speaking on education, honesty, all the time. I think honesty is extremely important. I think the old handshake and live by your word is sort of dying off. And I think the troubles we have as contractors and leaders is because we don't have that level of honesty and trust anymore with each other. You know, I mean, you got contractors out there that are bidding low and, you know, going to change order high, and that's how they make their profit. And then you got customers who are hiring construction managers to protect them. And we're all sort of like on the defensive with each other.
When you think about honesty, does it, in your mind, does that go beyond your own workforce? Do you strive to select industry partners or your vendors, your distributors, manufacturers, all that, that in your estimation have that element of honesty in their business approach as well?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we can only be as honest as our partners, right? So if we have someone who's not going to be as honest, it's just going to bring us all down. So yeah, it's very important that we choose and align with the people who are going to align with our values as well.
The company highlight the importance of educating your clients, and you describe yourselves as, and I'm going to quote, a resource for all types of education and communication needs. So I guess I would ask, do you think of your team as a concierge service for your clients' needs across the electrical construction industry? Is that how they reach out to them and how they get to them?
Yeah, I mean, anyone can install raceways, pull wire, right? But, you know, we really focus, like I said, on the education side of things and being a resource for our clients, help them make decisions and stuff like that. And it's a hard barrier to get past, you know, because it's, you know, different. It's a different business model than what we're used to, right? But we notice that our clients want a knowledgeable resource with, you know, good industry ties so that they can make quick, informed decisions. And we see clients wanting and seeking these long-term relationships, you know, versus a contractor who's going to bid low and looking at the next project before they even start theirs.
How do you convince your clients that best practices that you recommend to them might require them to really move pretty far away from the way they used to do things? How do you get them out of the mold of, we've never done it that way, into being willing to accept new ideas, new technologies, and new best practices?
I don't think the clients are the biggest hurdle. I think the clients want anything that's going to be easier and best for them. I think the biggest hurdle is the industry itself. Change is hard, especially when everybody's busy. It's really easy to just do what we've always been doing. And plus, we've been doing it for so long, it's hard to think that there might be even a different way to do it. But I know like all of our clients and we're completely word of mouth. So we work in different states. We're based out of California, but work in different states, Texas, Georgia, and that's all word of mouth clients. And they're not paying us to travel from California to Georgia because there's no electricians over there, right? It's all that they want the experience. But I think it's the industry that makes it really hard. I don't know how many times I've went and tried to get pricing on lighting retrofit packages and getting calls back saying, well, we don't see this project on our list and there's no bid dates for it. And it's like, well, there are no bid dates. We're designing the whole entire thing. And then, you know, you get that sort of deer in headlights look. You know, like, what do you mean an EC is designing and working directly for the client? Like, that's not how this works. So I think it's more the industry that has that is the biggest hurdle than it is the customer itself.
When you think about the current state and moving forward of where the U.S. economy is right now and where the electrical construction industry is right now, how do you, as a leader, make the decision of when you most need to be proactive and be ahead of everything, or when there are certain times that you should just kind of sit back and wait and see what happens and not act impulsively? Is that a difficult balance for a leader to achieve?
Yeah, I think you have to always be proactive. I mean, especially right now with the technology, you have to be at the forefront. And I mean, not so far out with the shiny stuff that's really cool and not going to affect the industry for 10 or 15 years. But I think you need to be at least always forward thinking.
Do you have a positive view of where the U.S. economy is headed? Is construction in general and electrical construction, are they on a growth path or are they on a, oh gosh, we're barely surviving?
I think we have the potential on a growth path. I think there's going to be a lot of new technologies out there that should be electrical, but I can see us as an industry giving it up really easy, saying, oh, that's not our type of work, or, you know, we only land wires, we only build buildings, you know, instead of all the programming. And I think if we can, as electrical industry, take over the word integrator and bring that into our wheelhouse, then I think we have a huge growth industry. I don't know what the economy got. I could have said the economy was going to crash for like the last 10 years. So I have no idea, but I've always had a super positive mindset about everything. You know, even when the economy is really bad and unemployment's 15%, that's still 85% of people working. Right. So, you know, I try to look at it that way in a more positive outlook. And that's why it's so important for me as a leader to make sure that everyone here at what we call the classic family is educated and can bring huge value to our customers.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about that classic family. You talk in your materials, and I understand that these are materials to make your company known to current and future clients. You say experience you can depend on. So my first question is, how do you develop leadership skills among your staff members when so many of them are younger and don't have that many years of experience? How do you get them to the point of being the experience that your customers can depend on when they themselves may not have that many years under their belt?
We've always viewed experience and measured it by ability and education and not so much a time frame. And with the technology, it's an easy sell, right? So how many people have more than 6 months of ChatGPT or AI experience?
Right.
So our 19-year-old that just started a few months ago, he has just as much experience in that realm as, you know, myself, because we both started using it at the exact same time. So like I said, we look at experience, and when we say experience you can depend on, we're talking more about ability and education. You know, that such technology is changing so much, so fast that
you find yourself needing to use different skills to lead a younger staff than when you are dealing with older members of your team.
So pretty much everybody at this company, except for a couple of us in the office, are under the age of 30.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a completely different mindset than dealing with someone, you know, a Gen Xer or someone like that. But it's the same. There's no difference in the training. You know, it's no difference in inspiring people and making them feel like they have a home and they have growth and, you know, that they feel like they're helping society. You know, it's one thing. It seems like this newer generation is more about helping change the world for the better than maybe some of the past generations. And so when we're doing cool stuff with tech and stuff like that, it is interesting. And, you know, there is, you know, EV chargers, you know, you're helping reduce fossil fuels and stuff like that. It's not a huge change in the mindset of leadership, but it is a little bit just understanding what their needs and their passions are.
You are clearly very, very focused on the importance of education and the amount of time and the number of hours that you provide and that you require for your staff to have on an annual basis, which is way above the industry. I mean, you're doing 40 hours of classes a year, which is a lot more than many other companies are doing. How effective is that education requirement in terms of keeping your whole staff up to date with technology? And now that you tell me that all of them are under the age 30, I'm going to guess that it's not too difficult.
No, but you'd be surprised. You know, the younger generation, even though they've grown up with technology, it's always been there. So they don't quite know how their phone works. They just know they push a button and an app opens up. Right. But they don't know the processes that go behind it where, you know, some of us older, like, you know, we've seen the progression of it. But with education, like, we're a smaller company and we do a lot of different things. And so we got to constantly have that training just as a refresh. And then when we do have those trainings, it opens up our guys to new ideas for processes. We have one system and it's a automated irrigation system in a strawberry field. And we just had like a refresh training on that software and the automation of what it does. And we work with it a lot, but it's through the training, they found that there was like an update and they found a better way that they can go to the customer and say, hey, we can set up your irrigation scheduling way better, way easier. You know, and so that's why it's so important, you know, to just constantly just have it there. I think we learn better when it's repetitive, and that's why we require the education so much. That's why we require the guys for so much extra training, just the repetitiveness of always being in front of them.
Do the women that work for your company respond differently to the education than their male counterparts do, or are they all pretty accepting of it?
I think we all have different strengths, regardless of gender. And so everyone here at the Classic family is supported to learn. So I think that support makes everybody feel comfortable and wanting to learn.
When you're recruiting new employees, do you make the education opportunities part of your recruitment package as an incentive to help you when you're looking for new, really good talent?
Yeah, the education is huge. It gives us a larger pool of applicants because we're not looking for qualifications. We're looking for someone who's going to line up with our core values.
We know that one of the key issues for contractors, whether you're an electrical contractor or if you are sheet metal, no matter what aspect of construction you are, in fact, no matter what business you're in, we do understand, and we know you understand, that the most important thing you can be doing is to work on your business, not in your business. So you describe yourself as a smaller company. Does that make it harder for you not to have to work in the business and to really be able to focus on leading the entire entity forward on a solid footing?
Yeah, but I think you still need to be working in the business in a small sense. And I think that's why we can, we've had such good growth and we have a great staff is because I'm still there. You know, I still will jump out there and help them pull wire. And if they get behind, to help install and stuff like that. And it keeps me grounded in remembering like what these guys are dealing with and in the field and on a daily basis and stuff like that. But I started this business wanting a business. And I think a lot of contractors, you know, maybe when they start, they're just starting a job for themselves, basically. So, but no, it's very important that you work on the business. But I think you still need to be grounded and be out there, you know, and of course, the bigger you get, the less you can do that. I know as if I look at last year, I've sat behind this desk way more than I was out in the field.
Way more than you wanted to be behind the desk?
Yeah, that's why I say, like, yeah, I'm just getting fatter behind this desk, you know.
So now your company is a member of the Electric Council, and thank you very much for that. And you are serving as chair for Electric's new Construction Technology Committee. With so many different business opportunities on your plate, what is it about Electric International that makes it worth your time and effort to be involved?
To be honest, we're a young company, and I've known of Electri. I've seen it around, but I never really knew what it was. And then once I saw the research and the benefits that it was having on the industry, I knew I had to be involved. You know, I mean, I'm a busy person. I got, like you said, a lot of business opportunities. I got my hands in a lot of fires and stuff like that. But luckily, my family's super supportive. They know how much I enjoy Electri and what it does. So it makes it easy. It's not extremely time consuming. I was extremely honored when they asked me to represent the 9th District on the Construction Technology Committee. And I was even more honored when they asked me to chair, because there are a lot of talented leaders out there from my region. And, you know, it was an extreme honor to be chosen as chair. I have a really great team on that tech committee. I mean, that there are some extremely smart people that are passionate about the industry and technology. And I have the highest respect for all of them. I think it's going to be a great committee.
When you think about Electric overall, not just the technology piece, over the next 3 to 5 years, what are some of the areas and initiatives that you would say are of high importance? You'd say, you know what, Carolyn, they're doing a great job now, but they better be paying attention to what? Is there something that comes to mind?
Right off the bat, AI is something that it's already progressed so much in the last 6 months. I think that's something we need to look at, but I really think Electric needs to stay fluid. I'm all about long-term goals and stuff like that, but God, with the way the industry's changing so much and technology changing so fast, if we say, no, we need to focus on this and sort of close our eyes to all the other stuff around us, I think it's going to be a huge detriment. I think we need to really just see the world as it's come. As Electric, we need to see the world as it's coming in and pivot and shift to that stuff, you know, but be careful not changing every shiny object, right?
You, I'm sure, had a special vision in mind when you created your company, and that was back in 2011. Did you turn to someone in particular as a sounding board for you to make sure that you were on the right path to setting up the company and making it happen? Did you have a mentor that walked you through it or was by your side as you made decisions about it?
I learned real quick when I started my business that I didn't fit in the same mold as all the other contractors. So it was really, I never really found anybody as a mentor. Most times when I'd ask people, they would just say, "You're crazy. That's not the way we do it. You just do it the way we everyone else does it." And so instead of finding a mentor back then, I still have them now, but you know, I found a group that really supported me, and my wife, obviously, my dad, and Jerry Champlin from Monterey NECA. She was actually on my apprenticeship committee in Santa Barbara when I was going through school. And she's always been there for me, you know, and she's did a really good job, like keeping me in the right direction, but always let me take my own paths. So I think that was really important to surround myself with people who are supportive versus, hey, this is what I think you should do, especially because I was coming at it with a different angle.
Over the 12 years, and this would be advice for other companies who are thinking about opening their own businesses, changing their direction or whatever, what would you tell me and our audience has been the best part of starting a new company? And what was the most difficult?
Let me start with the most difficult. The most difficult, besides any regular business issues that nobody tells you about, you know, because even if you go to business school, they don't tell you about all these other different things. Plus, everything's changing so fast that they can't keep up with it. I think the hardest part for me in the last 12 years is trying to change the industry, trying to change the industry outlook on how we do things as an EC. I mean, I feel we're really respected in the industry, but we're also young and small, and there's not a lot of us that do what we do, work directly with clients and stuff like that. I think more of us work with the clients than is said, but it's just sort of like an underlying tone that we bid and build projects. The best part, the company in the last 12 years is just seeing the growth. That's been the greatest part, and getting new talent in and seeing them grow. And, you know, we've had people that left and started their own businesses, and, you know, we're always happy when we're not happy when somebody leaves, but we are always excited about their new adventure. You know, like we had a great scheduler and she was amazing. And she got a job with the school district because her kids are in school. And so it was easier that she could work at the same time as the same school schedule as her kids. She'd have summers off and stuff like that. So it was a great move for her. So we encouraged her to take the job and stuff like that. So that's probably the best thing, is to see people grow in their careers and stuff like that.
When you were setting up the company, had you made the conscious decision that you were only going to look for young talent? Or was that the nature of it because of the rapid pace at which technology was piling on and people needed to be knowledgeable in order to be able to serve the customers?
I would like to say I had this grand vision of like never having anyone over the 30 and I'm some business guru and, you know, you guys can pay me $20,000-$30,000 to show up and tell you this story. But in reality, it just gravitated that way. I don't think it's an age thing. I just think that older people are a little more intimidated about some of the stuff we do and, you know, the programming and stuff like that. They don't feel they could do it. And so I think we just, you know, that's how we ended up getting a younger crew.
As you think about your own career, and obviously you've been working for more than just this company, going back, thinking about your own development and your own growth, what's the best advice that you ever received?
That's a hard one. I don't think I ever got one piece of advice that was great. I got a lot of good advice out there. And I think any good leader will take snippets of every piece of advice they get and sort of create their own. But I mean, I can sum it all up as, you know, being passionate and truly believing in yourself and your values and helping people succeed. I think that's probably the biggest, best advice I ever got is let people succeed, let them grow, let them move on to different companies and stuff like that. You know, it's not like we're trying to chase our talent away, but we don't have huge turnover. And so I think that's probably the best advice, you know, and someone else said, you know, I think there's that famous quote that says, what happens if we train them and they leave? And then someone else says, what happens if they train and stay, or we don't train them and stay? So along those lines, probably the best leadership advice I got.
Is there any particular thing that you would like to share with our audience as a, listen, I learned this one the hard way. So here's a bit of advice for you. I mean, you talk about being passionate, you talk about believing in yourself. Those are clearly values that you hold close to your own heart and your way of business. Anything else you want to let our audience know about? Anything I haven't asked you about in terms of leadership that you think would be important to share with them?
I think we need, as leaders, especially now more than ever, we got to be very compassionate and have a lot of empathy for not only our teams, but our clients as well. And I think we really got to focus on that loyalty. I think this whole new generation is coming up with brand loyalty. And I think that's going to be more important in the years to come. I think that's something to really focus on. You know, if you look at how many people have iPhones over Androids and you know, that they're Apple loyalists. And I think that I think as electrical contractors, we can work the same way, you know, and I think it needs to start with your staff, like build a brand and let the staff feel happy working. I mean, people go work at Google to say they work at Google. in our tiny little area, you know, people get excited when they work for Classic, you know, because they know it's a family style business. They know that you're going to be nurtured and tons of potential for growth in any direction you want to go.
Well, Toby, we really appreciate your time and your insight and your comment now about being compassionate and that it has to start with the staff and that you're building a brand that really is a family brand of a way to approach business and how passionate you are about it. So thank you very much again for your time today. For our audience, I want you to know that Toby got up and did an interview at 6 a.m. his time because he really believed in wanting to share his thoughts with our Electri audience. So if you are interested in other Think Like a Leader interviews, go to electri.org. There are almost 60 people who have shared their concept of leadership with us, and there are more to come. So Toby, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you to our audience. Bye-bye for now.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's Think Like a Leader conversation. You can access every interview in this series on our website, electri.org, or you can subscribe on your favorite podcast app. This is a remarkable look inside the electrical construction industry, and it's yours for the listening.